Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back to this week's episode, which is going to literally and figuratively, no pun intended, blow your mind. I have with me repeat guest, Dr. Michelle Roberts, who, if you've heard any of our prior episodes, I mean, I first started with Michelle on our Instagram live show where she blew my mind about something called complex PTSD, which I had never heard about. Our whole InstaFam went wild when I started this podcast. Michelle came on and talked about truly what a narcissist is. So this is the person, you guys, that so many smart daters have worked with. Michelle Roberts is an unbelievable psychotherapist in private practice. She specializes in women that have had complex trauma disorders. And let's say how many of us haven't at the end of the day. So Michelle, welcome to the podcast. Welcome back.
Oh, thanks, Bella. It's so great to be back and to see you and be part of this family. And I know so many people now in the Smart Dating Academy family, and it's always great to be back kind of talking about, you know, things that can get us to that next level of healing.
Yeah, well, Michelle, let's jump right in because we have so much awesome ground to cover. For those who aren't familiar with you, tell us kind of about your work in Chicago, how that led you to getting your doctorate and where you are now.
Well, sure. I guess going in the way back machine, I used to be a crime reporter in Chicago. And I, of course, saw lots of very sad, horrific stories, but often found myself wondering kind of what kind of personality structures were capable of certain things. And that led me into just being ever curious about low empathy disorders, right? Like malignant narcissism and psychopathy. And so I kind of started down that path. And over time, I segued from journalism to becoming a licensed clinician.
I got to jump in. After you won a Pulitzer, let me humble brag on your behalf. Okay. Go ahead.
Thanks, Bella. Anyway, I kind of segued over to psychotherapy. And when I was working on my dissertation, I kind of wanted to, you know, keep looking at that because what I observed in my own life with my friends, girlfriends, you know, in the early days of Instagram, even personal experience, I was noticing more and more people who, you know, seemed to fit this personality structure, and people were really getting hurt. And so I focused my dissertation study on women who identify as narcissistic abuse survivors. And the response to that was unbelievable. More than 2,000 women participated in the research. The findings were really groundbreaking. The main one that I'll mention now is that of the entire sample, 84% of narcissistic abuse survivors fit the clinical criteria for complex PTSD, but only 4% had been diagnosed with it. So this is just a huge gap. So imagine trying to go and get help and people are misdiagnosing you and not understanding what the problem is. And another thing that's difficult is with narcissism, sometimes it's really hard to explain these kind of subtle ambient types of abuse. It's hard to really explain how damaging that can be. Because unlike some forms of traditional domestic violence, there's no, you know, outward signs of it. In fact, a lot of it just happens in the privacy of the relationship. So I kind of embarked on that path and became a clinician, really wanting to focus and find the right combination of whatever we had out there, whatever trauma skills or modalities we had, to really target women survivors of complex trauma brought on by relational abuse, whether that started in their childhoods and or in their adulthoods. And that's right, and it can be how anybody. We get here.
Absolutely. And it doesn't have to be in the romantic realm, to your point. It can be childhood. It can be siblings. It could be extended family, friends. Who knows?
Absolutely. Anybody. Mm-hmm. And that was another interesting finding of the research, was that most of the women in my study had an elevated what we call ACE score. And I know you've talked about ACE scores on here before, but that's the Adverse Childhood Experiences Scale. And women who identify as narcissistic abuse survivors have four times the norm score for ACEs. And so you think, well, kind of, what causes the complex PTSD? Is it the early childhood abuse? Is it the adult narcissistic abuse? So we looked at that and we did a regression analysis to pull those things apart. And what we found out is both. You could have the CPTSD with only the childhood abuse, or you could have it with only the narcissistic abuse. But when you think about, for those of us who've kind of had both experiences, you know, that's a lot of stuff that needs to be worked through. And yeah. It's complicated. It often, talk therapy often isn't enough. So absolutely. That's kind of what brings us to this conversation.
Yeah. And CPTSD is probably what, as Michelle said, as Dr. Robert said,
Michelle.
Here. Okay. Yeah. As Michelle said, so many people, you know, I know you and I have talked about sometimes, you know, a therapist said I might be borderline personality disorder, or I might be X or Y. To your point, there's so many misdiagnoses going around. And I remember you educating me saying, wait, hold on a second. Sometimes we can be misdiagnosed with these things when it's really just truly narcissistic abuse that you've got CPTSD. And I thought, holy cow, it really checks out with the things that we were seeing in our practice. So as you said, Michelle, talk therapy isn't always enough. Tell us about EMDR and the work that you had started doing and how this helps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, what we see in CPTSD, you know, and I know that this is kind of where your world and my world kind of go hand in hand, is that we get stuck in these not so great dating and relational patterns, right? And we kind of find ourselves in this repetition of kind of always winding up with relationships that are unsatisfying and sometimes even abusive, right? And why do we go, we're smart women, we lead companies. Why are we going around and around and around in circles when it comes to relationships? It's very much a hallmark of CPTSD. So when it comes to breaking free from those patterns, there's a couple of treatments that I really believe can help facilitate this process. So EMDR, right, which I've spoken about before on this podcast, and psychedelic-assisted therapy, which I'm going to talk about later on. So EMDR is, for those of you who don't know, it's a form of psychotherapy that involves the use of bilateral stimulation, like eye movements or taps, right, while you recall distressing memories or experiences. And so the basic idea behind EMDR is that traumatic experience can get stuck in the brain, causing disruptions in the way memories are processed and stored. So EMDR can help us reprocess those memories in a way that really drives down their emotional intensity and negative impact. So this approach helps us process those old wounds and traumas that might be holding us back in our relationships. And like core negative beliefs, like I'm unlovable or I'm broken. Those are the two most common ones I see with narcissistic abuse survivors. Now, core negative beliefs are things we know aren't actually true, but they still feel true. and they run in the background of our lives like a hidden computer program. Mm-hmm. So by working with the therapist to reprocess those through EMDR, we can start to let go of some of that emotional baggage that's been keeping us stuck and find healthier ways to connect with ourselves and others.
Beautiful. And can you tell us, what does EMDR stand for?
Yes, it's a mouthful. Sorry. Eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
Perfect. Yeah. People ask me that all the time. I'm like, that was more for me. Eye movement desensitization and reprogramming.
Reprocessing.
Reprocessing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Learn that one today. Love that. And
I tend to rarely ever spell that out because it's such a mouthful, and I don't know that it really does a whole lot more to describe kind of that process. It's just kind of a lot of jargon, but that's what it stands for. Eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
Okay. And how do you know, Michelle, if there's dear listener out there is listening to this saying, okay, how would they know? They're driving their car, they're walking their dog. They might be thinking to themselves, God, this really sounds like me. How would they potentially know that they should go to a practitioner of EMDR?
Mm-hmm. Well, often, I mean, it's a process. Most people find their way to me because they've been doing talk therapy for years, even with really good therapists who care a lot. They've got a really warm connection with their therapist, which is really important when you're doing trauma work, but they don't feel any better. I call it living gray. You've done all the things, but you're still not feeling embodied. You're still not feeling, well, alive, fully alive. So it's just this sense that, yes, I've done a lot of work. I've talked through all of it before, but why don't I still feel better? And that's kind of that old program, right? That's, you know what you know. You know that you're lovable. You know that you're not broken, but still you feel that way in the background. And so what that means is there's still old traumas that are stuck in there that haven't been fully processed. EMDR is how I accessed my own trauma and found it, I mean, after years of therapy, found it to be really groundbreaking personally and how it helped me take a step forward. So that's kind of how you know. And when people reach out to me, I often just, you know, that's one of the first questions I ask them is, how much therapy have you done and how are you feeling and what worked and what didn't? So often EMDR, in particular, attachment-focused EMDR, it can kind of break through another barrier to get you to a new degree of repair.
Love that. And now talk to us about psilocybin and mushrooms, and everyone seems to be talking a little bit about this, mm-hmm. a little bit about that, and you are a real pioneer in this. So tell us about psychedelic assisted therapy, and where does it fit in to the spectrum of other therapies and modalities?
Well, so those of us who work in trauma really are embracing the new research that is coming out around psychedelic assisted therapy. And what this is that instead of using psychedelics, right, like psilocybin or magic mushrooms or MDMA or LSD to just trip and as a recreational, you know, activity, we use them for therapy in really controlled settings, safe settings. So this is still, there was a beginning of this research kind of at the midpoint of this century, you know, back into the 50s and 60s, and psychedelics kind of began to gain this attention in the Western world for their therapeutic potential, even though, right, they've been used across thousands of years with various cultures, right, for spiritual and healing rituals. But in the 50s and 60s, researchers started conducting these groundbreaking studies on like LSD and psilocybin, exploring how their effects on consciousness, mental health, and personal growth. And they really showed promising results. But then there was this kind of counterculture, right, of widespread recreational use at the same time. And there were some concerns about their safety and abuse potential. So these substances were then classified as a Schedule I drug in the United States in the early 70s and basically shut down most research into their therapeutic benefits. So fast forward, right, to the early 21st century, and we see this resurgence of interest in psychedelics for therapeutic use. And researchers at organizations like MAPS, which is the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, really important player in all of this. They've been at the forefront of privately funding clinical trials to investigate the efficacy of substances like MDMA and psilocybin, which is what I'm going to talk to you about today, for treating conditions like PTSD, depression, and anxiety. So in recent years, we've had this huge shift in public perception and policy regarding psychedelics. While they're still federally illegal, so several cities and states have decriminalized or legalized psychedelics for personal or therapeutic use, and recognizing their potential to revolutionize mental health care. I believe that's what's happening. So coming back to me, a year ago, I received an invitation to become a state licensed psilocybin facilitator. So Oregon is the first state in the country that has kind of paved the way for the legal therapeutic use of psilocybin in a controlled setting. So this allows those of us who are licensed in Oregon to administer psilocybin or magic mushrooms to people who are 21 and older for therapeutic purposes. And it's just a huge step forward in the realm of psychedelic assisted therapy. And it marks a departure, right, from that recreational use only of magic mushrooms and other substances. So I know that's a lot to say, but it's kind of important to kind of understand that context. Yeah. Because how did we get here? And how is, you know, magic mushrooms and tripping and all of those old associations we have with that, how do we take that and approach that in, you know, really serious therapeutic environments?
Right. No, it's so good to know. I mean, this is so educational for me as a child of the 80s. You know, it was Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. And if you drop acid, you're going to fry your brain and, you know, kind of unregulated use. And so now to hear that these things that we grew up with that are, you know, danger, 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 don't touch, that there's so much potential medical benefit to them is amazing. So in Oregon, it's legalized. I want to make sure I understand it to use by practitioners, but not on your own. Is it, or is it okay for recreational use? No.
Okay. It is not currently legal to take magic mushrooms recreationally in Oregon. So this regulatory framework is focused on therapeutic and controlled settings. So that's just to ensure that people receive proper care, they get the benefit of this substance and, you know, with support while they're undergoing psilocybin therapy. So yeah, and it's a very, I mean, it is a very highly regulated process that we're going through. Right. And we're learning kind of as we go and what works and what doesn't. But it's steeped in, you know, following all that we know from the science up to this date. So it's a huge step forward. And Oregon is, you know, definitely the guinea pig.
I love so that.
Exciting to be here. Yeah. And really, we've just been online really for the last 6 or 7 months. So there's service centers and facilitators that are now coming on online. And I've seen many clients since I got started the end of last summer.
Wow. And so how does psilocybin help CPTSD or people that have had relational trauma? How does it help? You know, and if maybe you can talk about that and then maybe a little compare contrast. Like if person X comes in, how do you decide which is which, or is there an order?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great question. So psilocybin has shown really serious promise in kind of helping people shift their perspectives and break free from negative patterns, right? Which is what we're talking about. So a psilocybin therapy session can open new insights and help us get to the root of what's been keeping us stuck in those old relationship habits. It's thought to work by disrupting rigid thought patterns and fostering introspection, which, you know, that helps us confront and process those deep-seated emotions and memories. And so for women kind of grappling with issues and traumas stemming from past relationships, psilocybin therapy can provide a heightened state of consciousness that may facilitate that deeper exploration of their emotions and experiences. So unlike traditional talk therapy that typically rely on that verbal communication, psilocybin-assisted therapy can evoke those really profound insights and emotions through a different pathway. And that often leads to more profound breakthroughs and healing. Yeah.
And so it quiets the rigid patterns in our brains and mm-hmm. really helps us to explore that trauma that's stuck. Is that that kind of how it would be? Okay.
I can give you so when you take psilocybin, it interacts with serotonin receptors in your brain, especially the 5-HT2A receptors, to get too wonky.
I love it.
This interaction,
you know, I love the technicality.
This interaction leads to changes in the brain's neural activity and connectivity, and it literally changes how you see things, feel, and think. So another cool thing that it does is it disrupts your brain's default mode network, your DMN. I'll throw another acronym on you. And the DMN is like your brain's autopilot for self-focused thoughts and rumination and overthinking, which we know are part and parcel, right, of CPTSD. So psilocybin turns down the volume on that autopilot, and that can really help break through those rigid thought patterns and open the door to new ways of looking at things. It also can boost that neural connectivity between brain regions that don't typically communicate with each other. And so this enhanced connectivity can spark those fresh ideas, creative thinking, and just a broader understanding of your emotions and experiences. And that's trying to put into words an experience that most will say really defies words, right? The experience of being on, you know, a mind-altering psilocybin journey, it can really feel like a journey to the center of your soul, right? We're talking about, you know, neurons firing and in better neuroplasticity and all of that, but what it really comes down to is this incredibly sacred human experience that helps us explore, you know, the nature of reality, our place in the universe, the interconnectedness of all things, right? So it can really be a deep, profoundly moving, life-changing experience. And that's even just with one dose.
And how does one ingest it, or how is it administered?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here in Oregon, of course, there are rules about how much you can take. And sure. But in general, if I'm working with a client who's coming to me and they want to really have, you know, a profound shift after we've done all the proper screening, and I usually would start out, you know, at a dose between 20 and 25, which is considered a heroic dose. Just for comparison's sake, many of the clinical trials have been dosed at 25 milligrams. So these are meant to be, you know, really big experiences. And then a person, you know, will be at the service center, which are comfy, you know, spaces for doing this. Rules require me to be right there with the person at all times. I'm there to help facilitate if anything is difficult for them. But really, the goal is to kind of turn inward and have your experience. And I always get asked, well, what's it going to be like? How's it going to feel? What's going to come up for me? I'm setting my intention for this. Does that mean that's what's going to happen? And no, there's really no way to
no.
predict. Sometimes people have incredibly beautiful, warm, connected, you know, experiences where it just feels like a wash of, you know, 4 to 5 hours of just love. And other people have really difficult, painful experiences where they're somatically feeling, right, the pain from traumas that they've been through, often for the first time. It's like almost an immediate access to it. And that can be really difficult. A lot of journeys have a beautiful combination of both. I worked with one woman once who had a very, very, very painful childhood, you know, narcissistic abuse in her adulthood. And she went back to the womb and she felt cold and small. And she heard a voice that said, you were born wanting to die because you knew you weren't wanted. Talk about the computer program running in the background, right?
Oh my gosh.
And so the psilocybin journey, right, through visuals and sensations, showed her and made her feel that pain of not being wanted, and then introduced her into a warmth, color splashed journey full of all of the memories of the time she was wanted, right? And so she literally felt her nervous system shifting more towards this warm feeling of being invited and wanted. And just think, if you have a program running in the background that you're not even fully aware of, but it's the one of not being wanted, just think how you're going to show up for your dates, for your friendships, right? Versus this one of being invited and wanted and open and loved. And that's how she started showing up after that. And it was really beautiful to watch.
Wow. And does it take multiple sessions or is it one or just it's person specific?
I think it's person specific, but here's the thing. I would never say, oh, you need to come back again, because you need to decide whether this is what you want to do. So a big part of the selection process is self-selection. Is this something you want to do? I have many clients who have had one really profound journey and are working to integrate that. You can integrate one journey for the rest of your life. And I have other clients who want to come back and do the next level. So we started by saying you never know kind of what you're going to get. That's true. But what I will say, and I've not even had an exception to this in my work so far, is that this medicine seems to be so mystically tailored to each one of us as an individual that we always get, no matter how warm or painful, the exact journey we need at that time.
Wow, that just gave me goosebumps. That's amazing. So whatever it does, it titrates itself to you, your physiology, your unique trauma, and whether it's joy or pain or some combination of both, it's what you need.
Yep. Yes. So it's been really, really humbling, right? As someone who has sat in the seat with people doing the hard work for years and years, it's very humbling to see and experience some of these profound shifts we can get in, you know, a much shorter period of time with psilocybin. Now, it's not for everyone, and it's not like a silver bullet, right, to all your pain. Once you have that journey, it's the hard work of integrating it into your life. So what you experience then becomes your new pattern, right? So we have to keep going with whatever it is that we're doing in the service of our own growth and connection. So integration work is, I would argue, and I mean, so would almost anyone working in this space that I know would argue, that integration of the experience is probably the most important part.
And when you say integration, tell me what that means. Maybe an example.
Yeah. Integration would be taking whatever came up in your journey and applying it to your daily life so that you have new habits, right? We know another experience of psychedelics is a reduction in the desire to drink and smoke, right?
Wow.
So you have this window of neuroplasticity that you need to work with. So you could enjoy that period of time without wanting to, you know, drink and smoke, or you could do the other things to support that behavior into being kind of a lifelong decision, right? It's not just enough to kind of sit by and wait and see what happens. You then have to, you've got some momentum, and it's your job to keep that momentum going.
And so in general, what have you seen? What kinds of, you know, maybe you can give us an example of somebody that has gone through this in your practice. And I realize it's so new and your practice is new, but
yeah.
is there any story you can tell us about how, you know, working with the magic mushrooms and then doing this integration work, how is this affecting women's ability to seek out and be in a happy, healthy relationship?
Yeah, that's a great idea. I had one client who, I always make a joke, because when you're on psilocybin mushrooms, you know, there's all sorts of time warpy things that are happening. So at some point, you know, I have to help a client go to the bathroom, and I always make a joke. I'm like, this bathroom has a time warp feature, so don't get scared if you feel like you've been in there too long. You probably haven't been in there very long at all. And I started saying that after I had a client who went to the bathroom, and she was only in there for a couple minutes. And finally, you know, she opened the door and she said, oh my God, I thought I was never going to get out of there. And she said, and then I realized I could just open the door and walk through, right? And so, I mean, it's a metaphor, but for her, it was, I feel like I'm stuck in things. And so often we get frozen in place, right?
By our trauma.
And so for her, this sensation of being able to just wait, I can just walk through that door. We become separated from that really basic but profound idea. And in, you know, I don't encourage a lot of huge life changes like in the month after you've had a psilocybin journey, right? You want to take things slow, but ultimately she left a very, very unhappy relationship and is moving forward. So for her, her journey, even though the message came to her in this kind of silly way about the bathroom door, right, was you can just walk through the door.
I love that. I love that so much. Like, you're not stuck in the bathroom or with this bad dude.
Right.
You
right.
have agency to open
yes.
the bathroom door and to open the door to leave him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because anyone who's had complex trauma really probably can relate with the dissociative symptoms of that disorder, right? It's this sense of just being stuck in time, stuck. Right. And frozen. So that's just one kind of example of an anecdote of one person I've worked with.
And if someone's thinking about this and, you know, they're like, God, you know, I listen to a lot of what Bella says, and I think I don't have a good picker. Right. How do you think this could help them to sort out their love life, maybe through realizing they have agency? Or tell us about that. Because I'm sure a lot of people are like, huh, this sounds really good right about now. Like, I'd like to get unstuck. I mean, I'm listening to this going, I don't have PTSD, but wow, this sounds kind of good. So I'm guessing it's, number one, not for everybody. Like you said,
it's not
a silver bullet.
No, it's not a silver bullet. And it's not for everybody. You know, people who have been bipolar disorder or a lot of family history of schizophrenia, we want to be really careful, right? And there's a few other, you know, things that we screen for. But for a lot of people, it can really facilitate this personal growth. And, you know, for anyone who's, you know, got a broken picker, right? there's something about that that is still kind of, it's sending the message that I'm broken, right? It's the same way of saying I'm broken,
yeah.
right? It's that script in the background.
Yeah.
And so, you know, just like with some of the examples I've already talked about, kind of a profound shift in those core negative beliefs that we have running kind of behind the scenes. I mean, it can really change that. What would it be like to be able to go into a dating situation not afraid that I was going to make a mistake again, but having confidence that even if I did, I would know how to kind of exit it sooner, and I would be able to kind of go on to the next one without so much shame and self-recrimination about it.
Absolutely. And about broken pickers or fixing your pickers, for those of you who have followed our work, I always say afterwards, to some extent, if your picker isn't broken, it's kind of a miracle, because we can't pick
right.
what happens to us. We can't yeah. pick the messaging even from society. Mm-hmm. We can't pick some evolutionary things, right? So if that's the case, remember, what do I always tell you guys? It's mm-hmm. not your fault,
yeah.
no matter what. And if it is, the good news is there's so much help around there that didn't exist even 10 or 20 or 30 years ago. So sit in that and just say, wow, you know what? That's cool that I'm not broken. And if I don't know how to do this, it's not my fault, because I was never taught how to do it. It's like, just because you're not, you know, a pro javelin thrower, well, I was never taught how to do it. Nobody's going to judge you for that. So this is sort of the same thing. We were never taught how to do relationships, right? We are witness to relationships, or we've had relationships foisted on us that we didn't pick from the right. time we were born, right? So, you know, nobody sat any of us down and said, hey, this is how one gets into great relationships with yeah. friends, with family members, with romantic relationships. So, yeah. so we're all in this together, you guys.
Exactly. Exactly.
Is there anything, Michelle, that I didn't ask you that I should?
Well, I think one of the things that you asked me is that I'm not sure I fully answered. And that was, you know, how do I know if psilocybin is right for me, or if I should be doing some other work first? And I think that, I mean, and I'm talking generally, right? There could be exceptions in specific cases, but generally, a psilocybin journey can facilitate a whole opening for therapy that you might not have been able to access before. So I had one client who, and this isn't uncommon, but who in her psilocybin journey remembered some pretty significant trauma that she had been not able to kind of bring up or confront in psychotherapy. And with that kind of at the forefront, then she was able to work with that. So basically, her therapy journey really kind of started at the psilocybin.
Wow.
Point of psilocybin. In other ways, it was like I've already kind of talked about a little bit, is that folks who've already done a lot of work and kind of feel stuck can also benefit moving forward. I love to work with clients who come to me for psilocybin. If I'm feeling like they're really kind of in a state of crisis or have a lot of anxiety, I'm probably going to recommend that in order to work with me, right? They could always go and choose a different facilitator. But I really like to be able to have a few sessions to at least teach them some grounding techniques and some other things that might be helpful for them if their journey becomes really painful, or if they get stuck in kind of a state of anxiety when they're doing their journey. So it's just kind of, you know, there's different ways to look at it, but I have really found it to be profoundly helpful in kind of breaking through some of those barriers where we get stuck in our self-worth, work and worth, I guess.
I love that. And this brings me, maybe I haven't fully understood. So how does one know, or How does a facilitator or a therapist assess, okay, you're stuck in talk therapy. Let's say you're living in the gray, like you said. How do you know, does one come first? Like, if you take said person with CPTSD, do you have like a first line of thing? Like, do you say, okay, first we're going to try EMDR for X amount of sessions, or it does it not work like that, where it's person specific, trauma specific? You may say you're going straight to psilocybin, you know, Jane Doe. And for John Doe, he might go to EMDR first. So,
yeah, well, it's interesting. And here's something that's just an aside, but an important one, I think, right here. And that's that my licensure as a therapist is completely separate from my licensure as a psilocybin licensed facilitator. So they're separate. And, you know, there's some, you know, good, I keep those two things, you know, pretty separate. So usually people who are coming to me, at least in this point, until I think there's more cohesion, you know, between these licenses, people who are coming to me for psilocybin are coming to me for psilocybin.
Got it.
Okay. And vice versa. Now, I might have a client who I think who's been a long time in my practice, who I think would be great. I would recommend that. I wouldn't recommend that, but if they inquired, I would, you know, I would kind of support them in that journey, either working with me or with another facilitator. Vice versa, if someone comes to me for psilocybin, I feel like I wouldn't, you know, based on the things that I'm hearing, they might not be ready. I might give them some advice, you know, maybe, you know, you want to work on some meditation and some grounding techniques before you start this, and you're not right for me right now, but then they could choose to go to another facilitator. So there's some choppiness, right, in this regulatory framework still that we're working through, but I guess that's the best way I could answer that question right now.
No, that's so great to know, because I didn't realize that. So I thought it was like, oh, and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. But I understand. It's like, It's like blue hat, yellow hat. Now You're ultimately the hat wearer. So you can talk to somebody and say, I think you should be with me in my yellow hat or me in my blue hat, or you can do both hats, but you ultimately partner with the client to make those assessments.
Exactly. And I've had people come for psilocybin who we've had this discussion, and instead of treating them with that, we've been doing EMDR, right? And so that's a different hat. And that's been going great, right? And they've not wanted to do psilocybin since then, because they're getting traction. And I'm not saying one is better than the other. In fact, I think they kind of work beautifully together.
Together, right? Mm-hmm. Like all of it, talk, EMDR, psilocybin, like I can only imagine as your practice, as you are in practice longer and longer, you'll probably start to see like, okay, like, yeah, maybe we're going to shift to here, but then we're going to go back here, because you start to understand how these things all work together, which I'm guessing they will. And isn't that exciting?
Yeah. And like, we're at the very beginning of this, right? So what's happening here in Oregon, you know, we're really trying to create this system that really works for people. And, you know, also trying to, you know, stay true to, you know, our other licenses. So they're separate. But, you know, I hope for a time, you know, someday when there's just much more kind of overlap. And there is overlap just because I am who I am, right? And other therapists who are also licensed psilocybin practitioners, we are who we are. We bring these skills in no matter what, right? But we have to just be careful of what hat we're wearing and when.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And I'm sure it will only evolve to get better and better.
I hope so. Yes. Yeah.
Michelle, you're the best. Thank you so much for enlightening me and our audience with this. I think this shows so much promise, and I'm honored and grateful for your time on the show today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I always love coming on and seeing you and getting to talk about all of these exciting things we can do to heal ourselves.
Heal ourselves. And ultimately, Michelle and I are in the same quadrant of we want to help you to love yourself and to be able to have the kinds of relationships that best serve you in your life. And the beauty is that we are both, and I'm going to put you under this veil too, Michelle, we're both tremendously psychotically optimistic about about everybody's abilities to get to a better place, right? Mm-hmm. And one foot in front of the other. So with great hope and great love, I bid you farewell. And again, thank you to Michelle. And if this sparks in you the desire to inquire about how Michelle can help you, Michelle, where can they, what's your website?
Oh, www.drmichelleroberts.com.
Perfect. And it's Michelle with two L's and Roberts.com. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you're ready for a dating consultation, go to smartdatingacademy.com. Guys, love is in the air. It's springtime. The birds and the bees are out. The weather's getting better. So there's nothing like summer love. So until next week, I bid you farewell and have a beautiful week.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.